I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Randy Newman's song, Short People, written more than 30 years ago, satirized discrimination with lines like, short people got no reason to live, and don't want no short people round here, and short people got nobody to love. The song also shed light on the actual prejudice and discrimination that short people have had to contend with during their lives. President Trump has denigrated his opponents and critics with diminutive nicknames, Mini Mike for presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg, Little Marco for Senator Marco Rubio when he was a presidential candidate, and Little Rocket Man for Kim Jong-un before he became Trump's BFF. Well, today on Radio Times, what's behind short shaming, what explains heightism, and how to address this long-standing bias? We have two guests who have joined us. Tanya Osinski, in fact, joins us by Skype. She's an attorney, wrote a book called Shortchanged, Height Discrimination and Strategies for Social Change. And Tanya Osinski, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Also with us and joining us by telephone is Seth Ulinsky, author of Amazing Heights, How Short Guys Stand Tall. And Seth Ulinsky, nice to have you with us as well.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I have to say, I posted something on Facebook yesterday just saying what the show was about today. We got such a big response, and I'll be reading some of these comments during the hour. But it seems, Tanya, that people want to talk about this issue. Is it about time?
I think so. I'm so happy, despite the negative press that we've been getting to it, but that it's finally an opportunity to raise some awareness about this issue. It is long overdue.
Well, let's start with some definitions. I think we need to know what it is we're talking about. And Tanya, since you're the lawyer here, how would you describe what heightism is?
Well, it's not an official legal term that is widely used, but basically it just means that it's a prejudice or some form of discrimination against a person on the basis of height. And it can be also against people who are taller than average, but it's much more common against people who are shorter than average.
And Seth, what do you see as the kind of the root of height prejudice? What's at the root of all this?
Great question. So I think if you kind of look back in history and time, being taller and bigger was definitely an advantage when it came to, protecting your family and kind of your plot, if you will, of land and things of that nature. So while society has evolved, that's not necessarily a super important factor to surviving today. Unfortunately, some of these hardwiring things in the brain still exist where, basically based on heuristics or these short snap decisions that we make, when you first see somebody, you notice their height, and we perceive people that are taller as being bigger, better, stronger, faster, kind of higher on the social ladder as well.
When people talk about height and survival of the fittest, I always think, look what happened to the dinosaurs. They got wiped out, and a lot of little guys actually survived. Tanya, I don't normally ask people for their height when I interview them, but neither of you are with me here. And I think we need to sort of understand when someone describes themselves as short, what does that mean?
If I may jump in, it's really relative. So in any population of individuals, height is going to be based on a bell curve. So there's going to be the majority of people hovering around the middle, probably 80 to 90% would be considered average or close to average. And then the folks who are on the tail ends of the bell curve would be considered the extremes. So typically people think that the bottom 5% of the population, it would be considered short. Some people think it's the bottom 10%, but it's all relative. In a population of basketball players, the shortest individuals are probably not that short when you look at them in the general population. So it just depends on who's around you.
How do you describe yourself?
I am short. I am 4'10", which is probably in the bottom 2% of the population for women in the United States. But in other countries, that may be average. Who knows? But here it is pretty short.
And Seth, you're what, 5'7"?
That's correct. So, I'm not that short comparatively speaking. But as Tanya alludes to, it's all relative. So when I stepped on the basketball court many moons ago, it's definitely an uphill battle. And then, when I traveled to South America, I went to Peru, I was actually taller than the majority of adult males there. So it's really interesting, based on regions and whatnot as well.
And Seth, I was reading a little bit about you. You played a lot of sports as a kid. Was being on the shorter side, was that a problem for you?
Well, it's interesting because I was about 5'7 when I was 10, 11 years old. So actually, I was on the other side of the spectrum. I was definitely one of the taller kids, and as a result, kind of dominated a lot of the sports I played. So as I kind of slowed my growth, so to speak, I had to kind of rely on grit and hustle and other intangibles a little bit more.
Were you a good athlete, though?
I held my own. I baseball, basketball, football. I also ski downhill. So, pretty much anything athletic, I tended to kind of do okay with, yeah.
Tony, you wrote that you were actually not just the smallest kid in your class, you were really the smallest kid in the school. What was that like for you? How did you handle that? Or did you have to handle that?
Well, I think I was always frustrated by always being treated as a child. And even when I was a child, I was always treated as a younger child than I really was. And that is something that happens with short children all the time. People tend to treat them as younger than they are, and it makes them feel bad about themselves. As for me, it just made me really angry, and it made me want to try to prove myself all the time. I didn't think of myself as a victim. I never even really heard of it as any kind of form of discrimination until I started as an adult seeing children being treated poorly. And that's what really got me thinking about the discrimination aspect of it.
Well, I think the idea of treating someone who's short as younger than they are is really something we should think about and talk about, because as you said, Tanya, is that true even as an adult, that you're treated more like a child because you're under 5 feet tall?
Yes, it's definitely true. It's been the case for me all of my life. And others that I've talked to who are very short, that's a common complaint. We're infantilized. Our concerns are minimized and dismissed more often than other people's. We're just not taken as seriously, especially in the workplace. That's a concern, especially for professionals like lawyers and accountants and doctors. It's definitely an additional hurdle to overcome.
How about for you, Seth? Curious about, as you said, you were kind of a tall kid for a while, and then you essentially stopped growing. While it sounds like your friends kept growing, did you feel in any way that you have been treated as a younger person than you are?
No, not necessarily. And I do think when it comes to athletics, probably one of the last things you ever want to do is underestimate your opponent. So in that regard, I didn't necessarily mind people thinking they had an advantage over me based on being a few inches taller, for example. But to Tanya's point, in the workplace, I think there have been certain times over my roughly 20-year career in corporate where I definitely took note of individuals who are taller, maybe getting a leg up or a promotion, when certainly there were others that were as qualified, if not more so. So it's really interesting when you start to, just take note of your environment, whether it's the workplace or sports, this notion of height bias and potentially height discrimination.
The idea of bigger is better, Seth?
Exactly.
If we're talking about prejudice, Tanya, is it time for, we have laws against prejudice based on race and religion and other things. Is it time to add height to that as well?
Well, I personally do think so. There are a couple of states that already have laws to that extent, and people have not been taking advantage of those laws because it's still kind of an issue that nobody thinks about, it's not on anybody's radar. But I think it doesn't hurt anybody to add this as an issue, especially since it affects millions of people. And why not open a debate? Why not have a debate nationwide about what it is? Why is it important? Is it something that we need to do or not? I think the time has come to at least start a conversation about it and get everybody's opinions in there.
Do you think the president has made those short shaming okay, or do you think it's kind of boomerang back on him so that he looks and sounds like a schoolyard bully?
Well, I mean, it's a political ploy, right? I mean, he does this to all of his opponents, and the goal is to try to minimize their influence, and that's just his style. It does help that he is raising it as an issue, and now we're talking about it, so that's good.
Right.
But I think it is harmful, because what it does is really play on people's prejudices, things that that are there and that people don't really think about, but are in their minds. And it doesn't hurt me, because I'm an adult. I've dealt with insults. I don't care. But I think it does hurt children who are short, who are already bullied in the schoolyards. Now these bullies have an even, you know, more permission to continue and increase their bullying, and the kids who are short don't really have anybody standing up for them, if I can use that term.
Yes, you can. Seth, I mean, do you think, I don't want to compare boys and girls here, but do you think boys have a harder time when it comes to this issue of height?
Oh, I'll try and tread lightly here.
I realize it's a loaded question, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say in general, shorter men tend to have a little bit more challenging time, and you know, I'll say dating, for example. But certainly in the workplace, you could, you know, make the argument there as well. But overall, you know, it's ugly on both sides. So just the fact that it gets a hall pass is not good, as Tanya said. It is going to take some education, and if it takes our president making comments that are just, you know, I think at an early age, most of us learn that you really shouldn't, you know, pick on people based on physical traits or characteristics, and maybe he just wasn't there that day, or his parents didn't instill that in him, but, you know, if it takes some of his comments about Mayor Bloomberg to kind of raise awareness, then so be it.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a short break and then we'll get back to our conversation, talking with Seth Olinsky, author of a book called Amazing Heights, How Short Guys Stand Tall. Also with us, Tanya Osensky. She's an attorney, wrote a book called Shortchanged, Height Discrimination and Strategies for Social Change. And to join the conversation, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can also call us at 1-888-477-9499. And you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. Many ways to join the conversation. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with our guests about short shaming, heightism. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Facebook. Sharon said, I'm used to people thinking their privileged height intimidates me. A man reached over my head to retrieve an item at a store. I looked at him and I said, I'm sorry I was in your way. A comment from Adrian. Is it shortism or is it just the misanthropic president making fun of his opponents? A Facebook comment from Derek. How did I handle it? That was the question I put to our listeners. He said, easy. I took boxing lessons. Then a comment from Laura. She says, my son is about to start middle school, and I can see how being the smallest boy irritates him, potentially making him a target for bullies. Let me pick up on Laura's comment and see both from you, Tana, and both from you, Seth. I'll start with you, Seth, about what you could say to Laura about how to help her son. Seth, any ideas?
Well, it never hurts to, you know, ask for help if you do run into a situation. And as I mentioned in my book, sometimes, you know, if you're a smaller child that's being picked on, asking for help isn't necessarily the cool thing to do, but it's the more intelligent thing to do versus, you know, trying to take matters into your own hands and starting a fight, for example, which, you know, sometimes you get boxed into a corner and you've got to defend yourself, of course. But I would say just making either a teacher, a parent, someone aware of the situation is kind of a step one. Or you become kind of friends or allies of some of the bigger kids, as I did in school, that weren't necessarily viewed as cool, but, you know, they held their own, so to speak.
What do you think, Tanya?
Those are great ideas. And likewise, my book includes many practical solutions and suggestions on how to help short children, both from parents as well as for teachers and school administrators and other adults. But I think it's important to do many things. First, we need to make it clear to our kids every day that they are perfect just the way they are. And having that acceptance from your family is very important to their self-esteem. But one thing that could be also good to do is have some role-playing exercises. You know, when somebody calls you shorty, how would you respond? And kind of give them a chance to practice their responses, because when something happens to you, it's often difficult to immediately come up with the best, reaction. But if you've practiced it, it might be easier and it might be more automatic. So another thing is good to focus on is, you know, working on helping them understand the important things, the really important things that they need to think about, like character, like kindness, like integrity, that are so much more important than physical appearance. So the more you work with your kids to help them understand what the truly important things about life are and what is truly important about themselves, that it's not their physical appearance, then they'll feel better about themselves too.
And I think that can apply to many different kinds of characteristics. Seth, let me go back to you, because we've been talking about shortness, the disadvantages or the difficulties, but it seems to me if we flip it around, I mean, there are advantages. There are things that we should celebrate. I wonder if you could do that for us.
Absolutely. So, for example, you know, I've gotten involved in endurance sports, and kind of having a smaller, lighter frame is definitely an advantage when you talk about running, for example, or some of these obstacle course races that I've participated in. You don't tend to see really, really big people doing well. They might do okay at a couple of within a couple of elements within the race, but kind of overall, it tends to be smaller, faster. People do a little bit better. And, you know, in addition to that, just something as simple as traveling. So the next time you travel coach, me, for example, if I'm sitting there next to somebody that's like 6'2", 6'3", it doesn't take a genius to realize they're not quite as comfortable as I am. So, that's another kind of silver lining.
Yeah, never a problem.
Go ahead, Tanya. Yeah, go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, I love traveling. No problem with the coach seats at all. One of the more important things that short people should be really proud of, and you alluded to this earlier with the comment about dinosaurs, is that there have been many, many studies that have showed that short people actually live longer, and they are more likely to survive horrible
apocalypse.
Because we do take less energy and are just more compact in many ways.
I had quite never thought of it that way. Let me throw out, though, another thing. And I have to say, I work at a place with more than 100 people here. And there are some very powerful short people, and I'm talking about men and women, who are in powerful positions at this station. And I'm sure that's true at other places. And while there is this prejudice, and we can't get around that, I think there's so many examples of people whose height was not, I mean, either they had to overcome it through dint of their personality or circumstance or whatever. But nonetheless, I don't want people to think that you're just doomed because somehow you're shorter than other people. Seth, you want to speak to that? And then Tanya will get you in on that as well.
Oh, absolutely. I would say that ultimately people should focus on controlling what they can. So like Tanya alluded to, you know, that includes character, you know, how you treat others. If you look throughout history, you know, and my focus of my book was on males in particular, Martin Luther King Jr., Audie Murphy, to, you know, kind of current day times, people like Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos. These are not towering figures by any stretch, but each of these men have done really impressive things throughout history and, you know, in some cases become icons.
Tanya, I've been to the Toronto Film Festival a couple of times, and oftentimes you see movie stars there. And I have to say, the thing that was so amazing to me is, for the men and the women, is they're short and they're little and they're slight. And, you know, we put them on these pedestals, but when you see them in the flesh, they're not tall.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right, and so is Seth, because there are a large number of incredibly accomplished, successful people who are short, and that's great, and I love that, and then that's how it should be, because height really should be irrelevant, right? We want it to be irrelevant, and it is. But that, at the same time, doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk about the issue, because the rest of the world who are not rich and famous and super successful and genius, statistics show that they don't have it as easy as taller people. So I think we need to keep things in perspective, because there's always going to be great examples of very accomplished people, but that doesn't mean that there is no discrimination.
Not fair enough.
And for the large part, statistically speaking, people who are shorter than average are not treated as well in the workplace, are not as successful, do not make as much money as taller people. So I think we need to keep it in perspective.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Tanya Osensky joining us by Skype. She's an attorney, wrote a book called Shortchanged: Height Discrimination and Strategies for Social Change. Seth Olinsky with us. He wrote a book called Amazing Heights: How Short Guys Stand Tall. We are talking about heightism. We're talking about height. We're talking about short shaming. We want to hear from you. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us 1-888-477-9499. In fact, Shirley's been waiting very patiently, and Shirley is calling us from Wynwood. And Shirley, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm 4'11". And I've never described myself as being short. I'll say that I'm small, or I'm not very tall, but like shorter than what? I don't find the word to be helpful. And in fact, it's kind of insulting. So I think there are other ways to describe people who are not as tall. And also, it just never occurred to me that professionally maybe people were discriminating against me because of my height. I guess I just never paid attention. Mm-hmm.
Shirley,
definitely food for thought.
Yeah, sure. Is there a better word? Is there a word that you feel better about?
I don't know. No, I don't know. I mean, I'll just say that I'm small or I'm not very tall. I mean, sometimes it's funny, you know, if I'm in a grocery store and the thing that I need is on the top shelf and there's somebody working there who's, you know, 6 feet tall and can just sort of, you know, it's an eye height for him and I just can't reach. You know, it's kind of funny to me, but I guess when I was younger and the junior high girls would stand around gossiping and they were always a head taller than I was. You know, maybe that was a bit uncomfortable. But no, I don't know what to suggest. But maybe small or not as tall. Or,
right.
I don't know. Maybe we can brainstorm something.
That would be great. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Tanya, she's saying the word short somehow makes her feel less than.
I understand. And there's there's different words that make different people feel uncomfortable for whatever reason. It just depends on your experience with that word. That's not a word that's ever bothered me, but I think it's respectful to talk to people the way they would like to be spoken with. And if that's an offending term for her, then, you know, we should respect that.
Do you want to add to that, Seth?
Yeah, I would say, you know, a term like vertically challenged can also be used, and depending on who you talk to, that could either be more PC or more of a lightning rod. So Again, I really think it depends on the person. So it is a challenge to figure out how, you know, what's an appropriate label or descriptor to use.
Surely.
Not easy.
Yeah, surely. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Tanya, when I was a kid, I remember generally in sports or gym, the students would line up according to height. And I know that you say that is something that is really a no-no. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's a very humiliating experience for those of us who are on the undesirable end of that line, because everybody knows what the undesirable end is, right? And so do the kids who are in it. And that happened to me growing up several times, and I was always the last in line. But I sure remember the person next to me, because they were really happy not to be the last.
Everything's relative, right?
Exactly.
I want to talk about parents, and I wonder, Tanya, were your parents, did they ever worry about you being on the shorter side?
My mom, she was a single mom. She never had that luxury to worry about it. She raised me to believe that I can accomplish anything, and I really believed her. And she always told me that I can do whatever I set my mind to. And that's how parents should always talk to their kids, because it's true. And that's how these kids will grow up, to be resilient and always believing that they can accomplish. That's what we want people to think about themselves. And they can be the achievers and the super successful celebrities that we all want them to be.
And you're a lawyer. Did you choose law because you're interested in this, in looking at this discrimination from a legal perspective?
No, I've been a lawyer for 25 years before I even knew anything about this word. This just kind of came up to me a few years ago because I was angry at the way people were treating my kids. So that's kind of how it started for me. But I became a lawyer because it was a good fit for me personality-wise, and I really enjoy that kind of practice, but it had nothing to do with my height.
Seth, I want to get Connor from Delaware to join our conversation. I'll give you a chance to respond. Connor, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey there. So I was listening to what Seth said earlier about sports and dating, and as someone who didn't break 5 foot until like the freshman year of college, I found that, you know, in high school, I got rejected for like formal dances because I wasn't tall enough to be taller than girls in high heels. In sports, you know, I got stuck in the outfield in Little League. I got picked last in basketball. If we were playing contact sports, I might as well have been a bench warmer to a lot of people. But rather than letting that get me down, and I guess a point to my parents is rather than them letting that get me down, they always encouraged me to work harder, to be more outgoing. And I found that, you know, even now I'm only 5'5", I like to think I can make up for my lack of physical height with kind of like a strong energy and a presence when I go into places, so that people don't look at how short or relatively short I am, but, you know, they see me as a person with a lot of energy instead.
Well, you know, Connor, I can hear that on the radio. Let me give Seth a chance to respond to your comments. Seth?
Great points. Thanks for sharing, Connor. So, to your point, there's a lot that, you know, a not so tall individual can do to kind of boost their appearance or build their presence. So, for example, just wearing clothes that fit properly is huge, especially if you're smaller, shorter in stature. Just making sure things fit properly is huge, because you don't want to appear any, you know, shorter than you already are, for example. So just wearing clothes that fit properly. Public speaking is another way to really kind of separate yourself from other people and build your presence. So public speaking by far is one of the things that people fear most in society. So being able to stand up on a podium or, you know, just share your thoughts in front of a group is huge. And to your point, having some sort of energy behind that is invaluable.
Connor, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Tanya, let me go back to you. I remember from some comments from yesterday on our Facebook page that this issue of shopping came up, and a number of listeners saying, look, I have to go to the kids department to get clothes that fit for me. And you're talking about, you know, infantilizing short people. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yeah, I think that it's one thing that when you have to do that, but it's really disturbing to me when I go shopping and people kind of laugh when I tell them what my shoe size is. And then they say, well, you're going to have to go to the kids department to get that size. And it's just disrespectful. And it makes you feel like, well, I'm just going to shop online. Thank goodness that's available now. So I don't have to put up with that kind of thing. But it is disrespectful that people feel free to comment on your size, on your body, in a way that it's obvious that they're putting you down, that they are making fun of you, and they think it's hilarious. But sure, it's okay for you to laugh at yourself, but you don't want strangers to be doing it.
But do you think it's like ignorance that people say things like that, or they're just not thinking about what they're saying, or they're just not thinking about that, how that would affect someone like you?
I think they're not thinking about it. It's not on anybody's radar, like I said, that this is even an issue. Nobody's ever thought about that it's not socially acceptable to talk about height. We, even very polite people, think it's fine to comment and laugh about height. So it's just not something that has enough awareness. And that's why one of the reasons I think it's important to talk about it, so that people do become more aware. Because even, you know, it used to be, you know, 20, 30 years ago, acceptable to joke about, you know, gender issues, like women are so dumb and, you know, those kinds of jokes. But now it's no longer acceptable because people have started talking about it, you know, and there were all kinds of off-color, you know, types of humor that were considered socially acceptable back in the day, but are no longer acceptable. And I think that's what I would like to see happen to short jokes. They shouldn't be acceptable.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Tanya Osensky. Again, she's an attorney, author of Shortchanged: Height Discrimination and Strategies for Social Change, and Seth Olinsky, author of Amazing Heights: How Short Guys Stand Tall. We'll get more back to our listeners as well. You, our listeners, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about short shaming or heightism, an often overlooked form of discrimination, whether at work or in love, in politics, even academia. Talking with Tanya Osensky and Seth Olinsky about the societal prejudice against short people and how it manifests itself and ways to address it. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. A question from Alexandra. She says, I think the idea of classifying heightism as discrimination is a great idea. Can we expand it to include other size issues to make life more inclusive for everyone, like weight? Let me go back to you, Tanya, because height is something you really can't change, whereas weight is. And I wonder if you could speak to the difference.
Well, I mean, that's an obvious difference, but at the same time, if we're talking about discrimination in the workplace, ideally what we should all be striving for is that people should be treated and promoted and paid in accordance with their qualifications and their abilities and their merit, and not on any kind of physical trait. So to that extent, weight should be added, and any other kind of irrelevant trait should be added. There's nothing wrong with adding them. It doesn't hurt anybody by adding them.
And do HR departments, I'm thinking about, you know, businesses, companies, corporations, Tanya, are they taking a look at this heightism as an issue that needs to be addressed?
I think I've seen a few articles about it, especially in the two states in the United States that have anti-discrimination laws that do protect against height and weight discrimination. And I think it's as part of our focus on diversity in the workplace, a lot of HR departments should be looking at it. And it is important because we want to have the best talent. The bottom line is, companies get the most value by having a diverse workforce that brings the best talent to the table, regardless of what they look like or what religion they are, or whatever the protected classes are. And it doesn't hurt anyone else by protecting a class that is currently being unprotected and is being hurt by the discrimination.
Seth, one thing I kept coming across in preparation for the show was this quote unquote, you know, short person complex, that someone is acting like a Napoleon, who apparently was not that short for his time. But nonetheless, can you speak to that kind of prejudice that I think is hardwired to some degree in people?
Sure. Well, I, to your point, the Napoleonic complex is kind of a misnomer because he was about average height for his time. So, but this notion of shorter people having to kind of prove themselves or having a chip on their shoulder, I think these individuals, unfortunately, they're kind of viewed as underdogs, or they shouldn't be doing these things. And then all of a sudden, they're acting like leaders. They're acting almost like a small dog when compared to a big dog. The small dog may not know that it's small, so it behaves a certain way. I think that's probably the case with most of these instances, and unfortunately the press and other folks kind of spin it, and there really isn't any research out there that kind of definitively says, you know, this short person complex exists any more than the tall person, you know, that thinks they, you know, just due to the nature of how tall they are, should be ruling the world, et cetera. So it can go both ways.
Tanya, do you think there's height privilege? Should we think about that?
I do think there is. And I think that people who are lucky to be tall do receive a certain deference from other people. You even see it with tall children who are more often just assumed to be leaders. They are more often, you know, given leadership opportunities. So over, you know, their adolescence and young adulthood, they become accustomed to be leaders. They are expected to be leaders. And so it kind of reinforces itself. So there is a privilege, because when you walk into a room and in so many companies and in so many schools, the tallest person is the CEO and the tallest person is the head of the class or whatever. So they become used to that the people just kind of allow them to be the leaders, and that is a true privilege.
Go ahead, Tanya.
When I was working on my book, I started asking my friends around who were very tall. I have many friends who are very tall. And I said, how much money would you accept to be short like me for the rest of your life?
Oh.
And for most of them, it was millions of dollars.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that says a lot. And these are your friends, right?
Yes, and that's a very unscientific little, right, you know, study, but there you go.
There you go. Let me get some callers back into the conversation. We've got Kathy calling us from New Jersey. And go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Well, hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I was telling your screener that I'm a short person. I was in what used to be a male-dominated field, but I found my way and did very well because I had a passion for what I was doing. I got good at what I was doing. And I found that I focused on that rather than my height. And people would always tell me, they'd say, well, how tall are you? I'd say, you know, 5'2". They'd say, oh, I thought you were much taller than that. And I really think it has to do with, you know, having confidence, getting good at what you do, and then have confidence. I'm a veterinarian, and I went to vet school before many women did, and did large animal as well. And people were really surprised. I mean, I took some flack for it when I was younger. When I was in school, people were shocked. They thought I couldn't do it. But I had such a passion for doing it that I just gained confidence. I got good at it. And then people started seeing me as much taller than I really am.
That's a great story, Kathy. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Seth, can you respond to that?
Oh, absolutely. So I have a few friends that are roughly 5'4" that own their own companies, and they're doing very, very well. And they're, you know, at these leadership positions, and they command a room as soon as they walk in. And it's not because they're the biggest, you know, individual in the room. It's because of the energy they have, their charisma, the way they present themselves, and, you know, that confidence that's, it's almost tangible with these two gentlemen I'm thinking about right now. So those are things that you don't just, you know, flip a switch and develop overnight. It takes time. And I think, you know, obviously confidence comes with developing a skill set, whatever that might be, in this case, you know, a veterinarian.
Right.
But, you know, in the meantime, there's a lot you can do to kind of sharpen and polish your appearance so that you do appear, you know, or I guess maximize your appearance, what you do have, versus wearing, you know, say, for example, baggy clothes or slouching, little things like, you know, clothes that fit properly and having good posture. Just, you know, they can, they're little details, but they can really make a difference.
And Tanya, she said that people looked at her and thought, oh, I thought you were taller than you are.
That's very true. Actually, there were some studies, real scientists did these studies, not me, that showed that there's a big perception issue with height, in that the more you think somebody's intelligent, the taller you believe them to be. So it's a very strange kind of thing. And yeah, definitely does help to have that confidence. But I do want to caution in that, you know, confidence is very important for the short person to believe in yourself, to have all of that confidence is the best way to live and the only way to live. But there's a difference between height discrimination, which comes from other people,
mm-hmm.
and whatever you do personally to improve your own outlook and your own self is extremely important. But the discrimination is felt by other people, right? You're doing what you're doing. Is not going to affect how someone else is prejudiced, right? So those are two separate things.
Kathy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Adam from Philadelphia has to say. And Adam, go ahead. You are on the air. Go ahead, Adam.
Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
So as a man who's towering at 5'6" and a half, I've learned growing up that stage presence and projection is a big thing, as mentioned many times. You know, plenty of great singers are, you know, 5'6" and under. Ronnie James Dio, you know, great male singer was. Bruce Dickinson was. And even people you'd be surprised that are short, that projected themselves. You know, Macho Man Randy Savage was only 6'1", but compared to Hulk Hogan, he looked about the same size because he projected. So I think projection really plays a big part in compensating if you're a short person.
And something you have to do, Adam, obviously, because you're an actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And has that then passed, I mean, crossed over to your non-acting life, would you say, the ability to project on stage?
Oh yeah. You know, personality and how well you project it. You know, a short man or short person can really cast a big shadow, you know, if they be themselves boldly.
Adam, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Seth, I'm back to you. Any comments about Adam's comment?
Well, I think it's fascinating. He referenced a couple of my childhood wrestlers there that I used to follow. And these guys, neither of them, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Savage, were small or short. Although, if you were to kind of compare them on paper, Hulk Hogan was, I don't know, like 5 or 6 inches taller than his opponent there. But just the way that Macho Man, again, his presence and the way he carried himself, he was on equal footing. So interesting that he made that reference.
Interesting. Tanya, let me go back to you. You mentioned that you started thinking about this issue with your children. Was there something that was happening with your children that got you to think about heightism?
My son, who was very short, was starting to get bullied in school. And when he was so small, he was less than the third percentile on the height chart. The doctors started suggesting that he needs to be put on growth hormone therapy. And I was a concerned parent, and I wanted to find out if he had a problem with growth hormone and all of that. So when we did the testing, it turned out that he did not have a growth hormone deficiency, but the doctor still diagnosed him with that diagnosis, and it was called idiopathic short stature, which got me kind of thinking, like, why is there a diagnosis? Because this child is absolutely normal, doesn't have a growth deficiency or anything like that. But still, the doctors were pushing me to put him on growth hormone therapy, which would last, you know, many years, daily injections. And as I started researching this, it got me really angry, because here's a situation in the medical field where we have given a diagnosis to people who have no disease, no deficiency in their body of any bodily function. But because of this social bias, doctors are pushing parents to put their short but, you know, normal children through years and years of growth hormone therapy just to make them taller. And I started thinking that that is something crazy that is happening out there, because there's really no proof that growth hormone therapy actually even works to make people taller.
Wow. How's your son doing?
Well, he's fine. He's 19 now, and he's about 5'5". And he was predicted to be 5'2". So the funny thing with this growth hormone therapy is that if we did that, which we ended up not doing, we would have given, you know, all the credit to the growth hormones and thought that that would have worked. But you can never predict how tall a child is going to be when they're fully grown. So it's just a horrible miscarriage, I guess, in the pharmaceutical world, that they are pushing this very, very expensive therapy on people who don't need it at unknown risks to them.
Let me read a couple of more comments. I'll put this to you, Seth. David says, I'm 5'4", and I think that the only thing you can do when facing discrimination is to be kind and spectacular. A comment from Nina, I'm a 5-foot-tall woman and a union painter in a male-dominated industry. I have to work really hard to overcompensate for my height, but I do it with pride. And what I heard from most of our callers, I have to say, and I'll toss this to you, Seth, is just people that are, you know, shorter than average saying, I'm okay. I've had to overcome some things, but I've done it with pride. I've done it with presence. And I'm sounds like people are doing okay with this. You want to speak to that?
Sure. And I think, you know, it's great to hear some of these folks sharing what they've done to kind of overcome society's height bias and tough circumstances. But not everybody's so fortunate. So unfortunately, I think a lot of children, for example, that get bullied, they end up tending to be a little bit on the shy side. They're not necessarily the ones who are going to raise their hand and wave the flag and ask for help. So, you know, just having friends and people and parents and coaches and whatnot that are aware of this going on is huge. And that, you know, some of these folks here just can serve as examples. You know, how do I, you know, deal with bullies, or how do I overcome society's height bias or discrimination? And it's great to, you know, hear and see examples that are kind of, you know, everyday people. Great.
Tanya, we're almost out of time here. Giving you the last word. Final thought.
Thank you. Yeah, I 100% agree. I'm with all those people, and that is fantastic. And that's how we all want to be. And the only way to get there so that we don't feel like we have to overcome this great adversity is by talking about it, and by talking about it a lot, so that it doesn't become such a huge adversity for all our kids, right? We all learn to overcome, but why should they have to overcome something they don't need to, something totally irrelevant?
Well, I appreciate both of you joining us today on Radio Times. Tanya Osensky, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And she joined us by Skype. She's an attorney, author of Shortchanged: Height Discrimination and Strategies for Social Change. Seth Ulinsky, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's the author of Amazing Heights, How Short Guys Stand Tall. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.